new you.
Globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Al-Shabaab. Kot vsako drugo sredo poslušate oddajo Južna hemisfera, v kateri tokrat odpiramo vpogled v Somaliji delujočo organizacijo Al-Shabaab. Organizacija, ki je vse od večinskega izkoreninjanja piratstva leta 2015 glavna medijska atrakcija iz Somalije, je pogosto razumljena zelo poenostavljeno. Zaradi označbe teroristična skupina je pogosto navedena kot razlog za tuje vojaške intervencije in je predstavljena kot osrednji akter, ki onemogoča ponovno vzpostavitev somalijske države. Glede na vlogo, ki je dodeljena skupini Al-Shabaab, o slednji vemo sorazmerno malo. Poleg predstavitve izpostavljene skupine in njene notranje organizacije bomo v današnji južni hemisferi govorili tudi o mednarodnih vojaških posredovanjih in pretehtali vlogo Al-Shabaaba v aktualni somalijski politiki. Čeprav začetek somalijske državljanske vojne sega že v 80. leta prejšnjega stoletja, izhodišče današnjega vpogleda v skupino Al-Shabaab postavljamo v leto 2006, na začetek tako imenovane vojne za Somalijo. Leta 2006 so se začeli spopadi med prehodno somalijsko vlado in skupino Zveza islamskih sodišč, ki je do leta oziroma ki je do konca leta 2006 še nadzirala večino južne Somalije, vključno s predstolnico Mogadiš. Zveza islamskih sodišč je na omenjenem območju v prvi vrsti zagotavljala varnostne mehanizme v obliki nekakšne policije, pozneje pa omogočala tudi določeno raven izobraževanja in zdravstvene oskrbe. Zveza islamskih sodišč je leta 2006 doživela več porazov v spopadih z etiopsko vojsko in vojsko takratne prehodne vlade. Ti so botrovali razkropitvi zveze v več ločenih organizacij, med katerimi se je v naslednjem letu formirala tudi skupina Al-Shabaab. Sogovorec Stig Jarle Hansen, profesor na norveški University of Life Sciences, poudari, da začetki Al-Shabaaba segajo že v leto 2003 in prvotno formacijo skupine opiše takole.
Al-Shabaab started before the Islamic courts as a small network in Mogadishu, centered around former Afghanistan returnees, fighters fighting in Afghanistan, and sympathizers and people that were afraid of prosecution from outsiders. So it's a small network that started out in 2003, 2004. It was very small. But during the rise of the Sharia courts, it rolled piggyback on the Sharia courts. So when the Sharia courts expanded, Shabaab also expanded, but it was a part of the Sharia court movement. Then in December 2006, the Ethiopians intervened and the Sharia courts were removed. And Shabaab, as well as the other parts of the Sharia courts, they went into hiding. But during the next year, they broke with the Sharia courts, partly because they saw the Sharia courts as too moderate.
Al-Shabaab, ki se je oblikoval kot rival takratne začasne vlade, se zauzema za upeljavo šeriatskega prava in za vzpostavitev muslimanske države na afriškem rogu. Skupina deluje v Somaliji, Keniji, Etiopiji, Ugandi, Džibutiju in Tanzaniji. Pri tem pa moramo izpostaviti, da skupina nikoli ni delovala izven omenjenih območij. Veliko nejasnosti pri razumevanju delovanja skupine izhaja iz njene povezave s skupino Al-Kaida. Čeprav je skupina Al-Shabab javno izpostavila svojo lojalnost do Al-Kaide, je povezava med skupinama zelo krhka. Iz tega vidika je zavzet boj ameriških vojaških sil proti skupinam Al-Shababa, ki je utemeljen prav na tem sodelovanju, nekoliko neoprejemljiv. Več o povezavi Al-Kaide in Al-Shababa doda Hansen.
Yeah, the relationship have been quite complex until 2012. You had the Al-Qaeda officials that were operating in East Africa, but they were never really a part of the Shabab. So the Shabab kind of affiliated themselves with Al-Qaeda fully in 2012. But the thing about the Shabab is that they never attacked internationally, they attacked regionally, and then when they attack with the terrorist attacks, they usually attack contributors to the forces fighting against them in Somalia. So the Shabab in action have not been that interested in attacking international targets. In rhetoric, on the other hand, they have been talking about the same goals as the Al-Qaeda, and they've been saying that if you cannot come and help them in Somalia, you can try to attack, for example, supermarkets in the West. So, but in actions, they are much more locally focused than Al-Qaeda. Yet, they have been important for Al-Qaeda over the last 5 years. Because of the rise of the Islamic State, Al-Shabaab was one of the affiliates of Al-Qaeda that actually stayed with Al-Qaeda. So, you know, in one sense, it was a mark of success for Al-Qaeda that Al-Shabaab was strong, because they didn't really go to the Islamic State. So in this sense, propaganda-wise, it was important to Al-Qaeda, but they never helped Al-Qaeda in attacking the West.
Trdno stališče Al-Shababa, po katerem sodeč svoje vloge ne vidi na mednarodnem džihadističnem gibanju, temveč v lokalnem delovanju, je pod večji preizkus prišlo leta 2014. Hitro rastoč vpliv skupine Islamska država je slednjo privedel do točke, ko je svoje rekrute in podporo iskala tudi v skupini Al-Shabab, ki je ponudbo ostro zavrnila. Ne glede na stroge ukrepe proti priključitvi Islamski državi, ki naj bi vključevali tudi smrtne kazni, je Islamska država vseeno sprožila delitev na frakcije znotraj Al-Shababa. Tako sta v Somaliji iz vrst Al-Shababa nastali dve frakciji, ki sta svojo lojalnost zaprisegli Islamski državi. Prvo skupino, ki se je formirala na jugu države, so hitro zatrle kenijske sile. Tako je trenutno aktivna le skupina v severnem delu Somalije, natančneje v Puntlandiji, kjer pod vodstvom Abdula Kadira Mumina deluje okrog 300 bojevnikov. Situacijo podrobneje razloži bivši član skupine Crisis Group in aktivni raziskovalec somalijskih političnih zadev Matt Bryden.
Al-Shabaab has long been divided between I suppose some would call moderates and hardliners, although I don't think we see any real moderates within Al-Shabaab. But certainly between those who were favoring a more violent, more aggressive type of campaign, and those who were more conscious of the need to keep Somali society or East African societies on board and to generate support for their mission. So in 2013, we saw the first overt split within Al-Shabaab, where a part of the senior leadership was purged, killed, and chased out by the leader at that time, Ahmed Abdi Godane, who consolidated his power and was known as a very ruthless leader with no hesitation about using violence or about killing civilians. There was then, as Al-Qaeda's fortunes were falling across the Middle East and ISIS was rising, there seems to have been growing interest within the ranks of Al-Shabaab in aligning the group with ISIS. But the leadership rejected that and has renewed repeatedly their loyalty to Al-Qaeda. One small part of Shabaab in northern Somalia not more than several hundred fighters at this stage, broke away under the leadership of Abdelkader Moumen, who returned from the UK to join al-Shabaab and then broke, set up his own faction. They've remained isolated in a remote part, mountainous part of northern Somalia. Many other Shabaab rank and file might still be interested in joining ISIS, but Shabaab has ruthlessly punished dissent, arresting and killing members they suspected of wanting to join ISIS, banning its members from looking at ISIS propaganda, banning the use of smartphones through which that propaganda could be accessed. And so for now, they seem to have contained divisions within the movement.
Če se vrnemo k notranji organizaciji Al-Shababa, je ena od nespregledljivih točk prav vprašanje financiranja. Matt Bryden pove, da so glavni vir dohodka obdavčitve na prehodnih območjih in v pristaniščih, ki jih Al-Shabab nadzira. Med drugim pa plačila prejema tudi od številnih podjetij, ki želijo delovati na območjih pod njihovim nadzorom.
Today the main source of finance for Al-Shabab is domestic taxation in areas under their control, taxation and or extortion. Al-Shabaab has a very efficient taxation system, whether it's in cash from businesses or payment for use of driving, moving goods and services through Al-Shabaab areas. It has a couple of ports under its control, notably the port of Brawe in southern Somalia. And it also collects livestock and produce from rural communities. So it's a very efficient system, very well ordered, and probably now their main source of income. Now, they also extort money from big businesses. The main telecommunications and money transfer companies in Somalia are required to pay tax to Al-Shabaab, or their infrastructure and their personnel can be attacked. And since the government really only controls the capital, Mogadishu, and its environs, and state governments similarly only control major towns, any business with infrastructure across southern Somalia is exposed and vulnerable unless they agree to pay tax to Al-Shabaab. And then there is also still networks in the Somali diaspora who raise funds for Al-Shabaab in the, I would say, mistaken belief that Al-Shabaab is a kind of nationalist liberation force rather than a totalitarian jihadist movement, and who believe that Somalia is a greater threat from its neighbors, Kenya and Ethiopia and Djibouti, and from Western encroachment. And so they still continue to get some support from overseas of that kind.
Prejšnji mesec je Somalijo prizadel eden najhujših bombnih napadov v zgodovini. Tovarnjak bomba v glavnem mestu Mogadiš je terjal več kot 400 žrtev. Odgovornost za napad pa je bila nemudoma napretena Al-Shababu, čeprav ta še vedno ni prevzel odgovornosti. Do številnih pomislekov pa je privedla informacija o izvedencu napada. To je bil bivši somalijski vojak, čigar vas je avgusta utrpela nekaj smrtnih žrtev ob izvedbi akcije ameriške vojske. Sogovorec Matt Bryden sicer meni, da je napad izvedla skupina Al-Shabaab, vseeno pa lahko primer, skupaj s dejstvom, da Al-Shabaab nikoli ni izvedel napada zunaj vzhodne Afrike, izkoristimo za premislek o ameriški protiteroristični intervenciji v Somaliji. Trenutno so v Somaliji prisotne mirovne vojaške enote številnih držav. V prvi vrsti so to enote mirovne misije Afriške unije AMISOM, ki veljajo za najučinkovitejšo pomoč somalijski vladi pri zagotavljanju osnovnega nadzora nad ozemljem federacije. Kolikšno območje trenutno nadzorujejo enote AMISOM-a, nam pove Matt Bryden, ki učinkovitost skupine ocenjuje takole.
Well, AMISOM forces are deployed across most of southern and central Somalia, from Mudug region all the way to the south to the Kenyan border. But in fact, they control mainly major towns and to a certain extent the main supply routes between those towns. But the rural areas have a very limited Amisom presence, if any at all. The main function of Amisom, I think it can be said after 10 years, when the main achievement has been to secure physical spaces, and I mean the main towns, Mogadishu, the capital, and also the capitals of the regions or the federal member states, so that Somali institutions and political processes can evolve. If we didn't have Amisom, it's very hard to imagine that there would be a federal government or that the federal member states would exist, because there just simply wouldn't be any room for these institutions to take root and to begin their work. But in terms of defeating al-Shabaab, the Amisom has not really been on the offensive for several years, is not equipped to pursue al-Shabaab into its strongholds and into rural areas. And so al-Shabaab retains, to a certain extent, the initiative to plan and prepare and carry out attacks, not only against Amisom, but also against government targets and civilian targets wherever they choose.
Vendarle pa imajo enote Amisoma pretežko nalogo. Kot opozarja Bryden, enotam Združenih narodov v 90-ih letih ni uspelo vzpostaviti nadzora nad istim območjem s 30 tisoč vojaki, medtem ko je število enot Amisoma manjše za približno tretjino.
Well, first there is there are different assessments of the strength of the force. Some observers believe that 22,000 Amisom troops should be able to secure southern Somalia. Others think that the number is insufficient. And I think it's fair to say that when there were more than 30,000 United Nations troops in Somalia in the early 1990s, they were unable to secure the same area. So it probably is expecting too much from Amisom to achieve more with fewer troops. It's also true that Amisom lacks mobility assets, air assets, insufficient number of armored vehicles, no helicopter ships or other air assets other than logistics to help them to surveil and pursue al-Shabaab. But I think most importantly, that's not really Amisom's role. Al-Shabaab is not just a terrorist group. It is also an insurgency. And it exploits and mobilizes the grievances of different Somali communities. And so using Amisom, using foreign troops to try to put it down would almost certainly just make matters worse. The counterinsurgency to sort of win hearts and minds, to use a cliche, or to address the grievances of Somali communities is going to have to be done by Somali authorities and the peace enforced by Somali troops.
Enote Amisoma pa so zgolj en del tujih vojaških enot v Somaliji. Svoje vojake imajo države še Katar, Združeni arabski emirati, Združene države Amerike, Turčija, Združeni narodi, Kitajska, prisotne pa so tudi enote evropskih držav. Ne glede na številne tuje interese v obnavljajoči se državi, pa najintenzivnejše boje proti skupini Al-Shabaab bijejo Združene države Amerike, ki imajo trenutno v Somaliji prisotnih okrog 400 vojakov. ZDA redno izvajajo letalske napade na območja pod nadzorom Al-Shabaaba in atentate na vodilne osebe organizacije, dodaja Hansen.
Definitely, there are other players. If you go to Mogadishu, there's several Italian soldiers there. The Brits are very interested. There's a Chinese presence, not very strong. There's also Emirati military trainers and Turkish military trainers. So there's a lot of military activities going on in Mogadishu. But the most involved country, the one that matters, is actually the US, because the U.S. can put their own armed forces behind their policies and will attack the Shabab. There's no other forces directly attacking the Shabab save the U.S. in addition to the regional countries in AMISOM and of course, the Somali actors that are hostile to Shabab themselves.
Če že govorimo o intervenciji Združenih držav, pa lahko dodamo tudi to, da po nekaterih podatkih v Al-Shababu deluje okrog 40 ameriških državljanov. Eden izmed njih je bil Abdul Mansur Al-Amriki, ki je veljal za enega izmed medijsko najbolje prepoznanih akterjev znotraj skupine. Mladi Američan je veljal za enega vidnejših pobudnikov ideje, da se Al-Shabab prelevi v mednarodno džihadistično gibanje, a je ta ideja naletela na nasprotovanje in ga je na to Al-Shabab umoril. Kakšna je bila dejanska vloga Al-Amrikija znotraj organizacije, razloži Matt Bryden.
No, he was actually a minor player. He was just a very visible one. The most important members of Al-Shabab in giving it an international profile included some of its founders, particularly Ibrahim Haji Jama, or Ibrahim al-Afghani, who was killed in the 2013 purge. He was among the first to leave the United States, where he was an immigrant from Somalia, and he traveled to Afghanistan to fight alongside the Mujahideen and Al-Qaeda against the Soviet Union. And growing numbers of Somalis made the same journey. Returning to their country in 1991 to try and set up an Islamic emirate, a group that they then called Al-Ittihad al-Islam. That initiative failed by the mid-90s. And so a number of them then returned to Afghanistan and parts of Pakistan, resumed their connections with Al-Qaeda and their involvement in an international jihad, and then came back to Somalia, usually around 2001-2002, as the American forces entered Afghanistan. And that is when we see the growth of Al-Shabaab as now the most potent jihadist threat. A lot of foreigners have traveled to Somalia at one time or another to join Al-Shabaab. Most of them are from East Africa, although we do see other members from around the world. And they cannot really function in leadership roles. They're dependent on Somali leaders to host them and empower them. Al-Amriki was particularly close to a Shabab leader called Mukhtar Robo, who took care of him and promoted him. And he was useful because he was a white American who used to rap about jihad, and so whose voice was used to try to attract westernized, Americanized youth to the movement. Several dozen American Somalis and non-Somalis are thought to have traveled to join Al-Shabaab, but it never really achieved a breakthrough status in terms of recruitment from North America.
Trenutna somalijska vlada je tako rekoč popolnoma odvisna od tuje vojaške in finančne podpore. Matt Bryden na tej točki opozarja na problem nasprotovanj med podpornimi državami. Izpostavlja primer Katarja in Združenih arabskih emiratov, ki jačata obstoječa nasprotovanja med zvezno vlado in posameznimi zveznimi državami.
Well, there's a large number of external actors involved in supporting the Somali security sector, sometimes at odds with one another. So you have a number of them in Mogadishu assisting the federal government to build a national army and the federal police. There are others who operate outside Mogadishu with the federal member states, building up state paramilitaries and police and intelligence services. And there are a number of problems with this uncoordinated approach. One is that there is not a stable political settlement between the federal government and the member states. They're still very much in competition with one another. So there is a tendency for this support to be used as leverage in the contestation between the federal member states and the federal government. That's also true to the extent that the federal government has chosen to align itself with sponsors like Turkey and the state of Qatar, while the federal member states tend to look to the United Arab Emirates. And, of course, Qatar and the United Arab Emirates are currently on opposite sides of a very bitter dispute between the Gulf countries. So that dispute as well is in part playing itself out in Somalia and dividing Somalis further through their Gulf alliances. The Europeans are mainly in Mogadishu, again supporting the federal forces, although some, notably the British, are supporting state-level police. And there's perhaps one more problem I would raise, and that is that the federal police and more importantly the Somali National Army are not perceived throughout the country as being national. They are seen as being very much drawn from Mogadishu and from the clans or communities around Mogadishu. So they're not really welcome to deploy in much of Somalia. And that is also a problem because it means that thousands of troops have been trained and equipped in Mogadishu by these foreign forces, but they can't actually operate across most of the country. And so we have on paper over 20,000 Somali troops, but their effectiveness against al-Shabaab is very limited, and there's a suspicion that many of them now have deserted or defected and are just ghosts on the payroll. So there's a need to rethink the whole approach to security sector support in Somalia.
Ne glede na to, da se podpora lokalnega prebivalstva skupini v zadnjih letih zmanjšuje, je Al-Shabaab še vedno deležen določene podpore. Kot opozarja Hansen, je ta v največji meri odvisna od slabih razmer na podeželskih območij, zaradi česar se prebivalci tega spregledanega podeželja obračajo k Al-Shabaabu.
I think it has been declining, and before it was clear clans that supported the Shabaab. As of now, there's not so many clans that directly support the Shabaab. You know, one of the clans that supported the Shabaab is the clan of the current prime minister, and in one sense they gained when they got the member got the premiership. So it's seldom that Shabaab managed to recruit from an entire clan, although they try to do so. But the thing is that in the countryside, where the Shabaab have a relatively stable presence, they can still force locals to join them, and they still provide actually a relatively stable source of income. So it's tempting for locals in the areas that they control or where they have a strong presence to join them because of the money. And some will, of course, join them also because of their opinions and their ideology. So they still have some attraction. And furthermore, corruption in the government courts will create some kind of sympathy with the Shabaab in the sense that they want an institution can decide upon juridical issues that is not open for corruption.
Matt Bryden izpostavlja, da napadi terjajo svoj davek v smislu lokalne podpore Al-Shabaaba, ki naj bi se v zadnjih letih močno zmanjševala. Kot osrednji razlog obstoječe podpore pa navaja prav nesinhronost in nasprotovanja med zvezno vlado in zveznimi državami ter slabe organizacijske zmožnosti zveznih držav na področju varnosti.
In general, the support is very low, and incidents like the October 14 bombing that just killed civilians and make no sense to most Somalis, that undercuts their popularity even more. But what we typically see is that at a lower level, in different regions of Somalia, where there is a state government, for example, some communities support that government. Other communities think that government is hostile to them. And so they look to al-Shabaab to strengthen their hand, to protect them, and to give them some bargaining power. Remember, these are very young governments. They are not necessarily inclusive. They rely on militias, for the most part, to enforce their authority. So for many groups who don't feel that they own these these embryonic governments, they see them as potential threats. And al-Shabaab slips in and infiltrates those communities and aligns itself with them. So what you see is a kind of patchwork of Shabaab presence, what I call a composite insurgency, where there are pockets of support for al-Shabaab across the country, but the communities in those pockets have nothing in common. They're not really supporting al-Shabaab. They're aligned with them for their own reasons. There's nothing unifying them except the fact that al-Shabaab has been able to infiltrate them on different pretexts for different reasons. So undermining al-Shabaab, defeating al-Shabaab, is really about unraveling that patchwork and making communities feel safe and that they have ownership and they participate in the state level and federal governments. Of course, that will never be 100%, but it should be possible to achieve that to the extent that al-Shabaab is much more isolated as an extremist group and therefore can be then targeted and finally destroyed through military and police action.
Somalijska vlada je po več kot dveh desetletjih državljanske vojne prisiljena v položaj, v katerem je popolnoma odvisna od mednarodne pomoči. Skupina Al-Shabaab je kot usihajoč konkurent za prevzem oblasti le ena izmed ovir na poti vzpostavitve celostne oblasti zvezne vlade nad ozemljem Somalije. Osrednji težavi pa sta najverjetneje omejena moč zvezne vlade in njena pretirana odvisnost od tujih držav. Več o dejanski stopnji avtonomije trenutne zvezne oblasti, na čelu katere stoji ameriško-somalijski državljan Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo, za konec doda Matt Bryden.
Officially, the Somali government is now, or has been since 2012, a recognized and sovereign government. In reality, that sovereignty is largely conferred upon it by the international community. Inside the country, its lack of territorial control, its inability to enforce law, and its lack of domestic legitimacy means that it doesn't really exercise de facto sovereignty across its own territory. But the government would, and its supporters would, claim that they at least have sovereignty. They are autonomous. They make decisions in the interests of the Somali people as a whole. Their parliament is chosen from all across Somalia through quite a complex electoral process that took place in 2016. So they would claim to be representative and autonomous. Their detractors will say that's not the case, that because they are so weak and because they lack access to domestic resources, they are heavily dependent on foreign allies, and particularly those Gulf states that they accept money from, and Turkey, and so that they are vulnerable to manipulation. And this is one of the issues that has divided the federal government and the federal member states and continues to divide them. So the degree of autonomy of the Somali federal leadership really is, to a certain extent, a subjective matter, and it depends who you ask and which side of the divide you're on.
Ob koncu oddaje vabimo še, da prisluhnete oddaji o somalijski vladi z naslovom Spodleteti bolje, ki smo jo v terminu Južne hemisfere pripravili marca letos. Južno hemisfero je pripravil Žiga.
Globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you'll see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan.